movies as well. You know, there is something attractive about it. The bloodier, the more violent it is, often the more entertaining it is. What is wrong with... Okay,
no, entertaining,
these ladies,
no.
For you listeners out there, these ladies are looking at me like, you sick person. But there's a reason why horror movies are popular.
Yes, there's a reason, but it's mental. It's a mental reason that I'm saying that if any violence takes place, then there must be something mental about it. Some complexities about it, some mental complexes, maybe from their childhood, maybe as in the way as they grow, they have some issues. That's why they think it's entertaining. It's not entertaining, but no, it's not. How come massacres and bloodshed would be entertaining? That's not entertaining.
I think that's dominant in men because they want to show off power.
Maybe.
They think like we can express our power like this. Maybe that's why men are attracted towards these games. I don't see women like doing that.
Yes, power. Because of power, they want to disseminate other people. That's why they kill them, because not all people can go by the rules you set for them.
Even Islam says, like, you know, give men the authority. Islam has attributed power to men and, like, love and affection to women.
Yes.
Like, if a woman gets gift for her husband,
yes,
the first thing the husband asks is, where did you get the money from? How expensive is it? Why did you spend this money in the, like, why didn't you get something that was cheaper? This shows that men do not need affection. Men always need power. They need respect. Like, if he's saying you don't go out this time, do not go. Accept it.
They do need affection. I don't think that's true.
They do need, but they, yes, more than anything else, more
power,
than affection,
yes,
more
power
than love, they need
important.
To they need to know that they are powerful.
Yes.
I think this powerful attribution that Allah has given them,
leads,
I think,
to
this
violence.
This is something that they take video advantage of.
That's true. I mean, violent video games, for example, more often you'll find men playing them. Movies, sports
yes,
like boxing.
Sports.
I mean, you won't really find it as dominant among females. It's more like a male thing. It's about the dominance factor. That
too much of energy should be really.
They want to show that they are dominant.
Way.
They have power, and that's all I think.
Yes.
And we've been talking about how it's more prevalent in men than in women. So if a man commits murder and a woman commits murder, the woman is more likely to be looked at as guilty. Ask me why.
Why?
Because the psychology of men and women is so different that if a man has committed murder, it is more likely to be something that he did in the spur of the moment. Whereas if a woman has committed murder, it's more likely that she has planned it. It's,
yes,
premeditated. I mean, you can see where I'm coming from, right?
Yes, that's true. Because they are so affectionate. If something wrong happens with them, if a violence has been shown up by them, then that means they had plans for it.
Mm-hmm.
It is not something that happened at the moment.
Yeah, whereas a man, he gets angry, you know, he just picks,
yes,
up a knife and
exactly.
They have a fight.
Men do not control.
Mm.
The power in them does not let them maybe think more. Think twice.
And of course, if we look at the political stage throughout history, we see that it's often been men fighting for power and position and prestige and,
yes,
honor and all of these things. And all of those things have, in one way or the other, led to violence.
Yes, and then they show women behind the curtains are doing plans.
Yeah, they say that
that leads to those,
yeah,
violence.
The man burns down the house, but the woman is the one who plays with the matches.
Yes.
Or like it's also said, behind every successful woman, behind every successful man, there's a woman.
Exactly.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Is violence increasing as time goes on?
Violence has always been there. Maybe if we're seeing it growing, that means we have more informations about it. I think it's not growing. It has always been there. And nowadays we hear more about it.
Okay.
That's the difference.
Sister Zainab?
Well, I think, yes, it's growing because of the urban stress. Mm-hmm. I said the urbanization is there, greed is there. The more I think you crave more, you desire more, you... and I think you the more the expectations increase.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's
There is how where it starts. Like, these are the root causes of violence. I think ego, I think aspirations. And aspirations increase as like we go modern.
Yes, yes.
As we turn towards, you know, as time passes, we go towards urbanization, we go towards a modern world. I think, yes, it increases because the greed increases. Expectations increase, aspirations increase. Like in past, we didn't have much facilities.
Exactly.
But however, like with time, we have new facilities. You just take your wife to some of your friend's house, and then she sees some extra things over there. Then definitely she's going to eat your head at the home, back at home. Like, why don't we have these things? And if like she even has patience on this thing, like we don't have, it's okay. But somewhere. If when once she's angry, she'll like show that violence.
Yes, everything comes out.
I'm having patience all the time, and you're not getting me things and all. So I think, yes, aspirations, greed, craving for more things.
They've increased.
And you crave for more things as we go, like as the urban stress increases.
Well, as I told you, violence has always been there. I think it's not growing. It's only changing its faces. There are different forms of violence. There is no war, but you feel plenty of that in your brain. I mean, you are feeling like a soldier that is going through all the difficulties of the war, but there is no actual war because there is a violence at home. And it does not need to be by beating or anything like that, like what used to exist in older families, in primitive families. But you hear things that are so violent. You watch TV, you see violence. Everywhere you go, there is a new form of violence. That's why it would affect all your thoughts and your viewpoints and...
Yeah, you're right. We are, even if we're not actively seeing violence, we're surrounded by it all the time through the mass media, through newspapers, through statistics and all sorts of, you know, we're surrounded in a world of violence, even if we're not actively seeing it. That's unfortunately all we have time for. Sister Asma, Sister Zainab, thank you very much for being here. Dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The political stalemate continues. On Tuesday, also a second round of voting to elect Italy's President of the Republic proved inconclusive, with a vast majority of the 1,009 grand electors casting blank ballots, as they did in Monday's first round. Italian political parties have so far failed to find an agreement on a consensus candidate. Meetings between party leaders have continued behind the scenes, And although current Prime Minister Mario Draghi remains the most likely contender, a deal on the figure that unites the country is still far from being reached. Prime Minister Draghi is reportedly trying to persuade political leaders to support his candidacy as Italy's next president. However, a large number of lawmakers oppose this idea, fearing that if Draghi is elected head of state, it could lead to early elections.
We think that President Draghi has to stay at Palazzo Chigi and to continue to do the prime minister, because if President Draghi moves to the Quirinale, it's really difficult to find another person like Draghi to continue the work in the government.
Also on Tuesday, the rightist alliance made up of the League, Brothers of Italy and Forza Italia proposed three possible presidential candidates. The League leader Matteo Salvini has repeatedly warned that if Draghi leaves the role of prime minister, the multi-party ruling coalition would likely split, raising the risk of snap elections.
Non siamo qui a imporre.
We are not here to impose anything on anybody. In the last 30 years, the president has always been named by center-left parties. We hope the names we are proposing are received with a willingness to discuss them.
It is very unlikely that a new president will be elected before Thursday. A majority of two-thirds of the grand electors is needed to vote in a new head of state in the first three ballots from the fourth round, so as of Thursday, an absolute majority would be sufficient. Max Civili, Rome.
France is starting their election season, but the issue of purchasing power has pushed a much longer-running problem out of the campaign, unemployment. France's army of unemployed were the first social group to be hurt by the coronavirus lockdowns, and they'll be the last to enjoy the recovery. The nation's top religious charities compiled a report, The Words of the Unemployed, to show the cruelty of adding harsh social judgments to economic and personal distress.
To suddenly find oneself without a job is to suddenly find yourself quite isolated. The lack of regular social contact makes immediate impact, and it's difficult to find one's inner dynamism again. The COVID lockdowns have made isolation for the unemployed even more total, as interviews are conducted only over the internet or on the telephone. And this can be even more discouraging and anxiety-provoking for job seekers.
The report and the unemployed strongly encourage spending tax money and time on collectives, associations, and social groupings which give the jobless a place for regular human contact, discussions, and the chance to work with people again on worthwhile projects.
A whopping 60% of the unemployed say their biggest obstacle in returning to the workforce is a lack of decent jobs. They report scores of competitors for every single job opening in their field. It's a complaint of frustration which has been heard often ever since the age of austerity started.
Since 2008, French unemployment has risen over 30%. Today, top French economists put the real unemployment rate at over 20%, as part-time work has exploded in a country where it used to be almost non-existent.
My real-world job experiences too often get minimized by employers because I have periods of part-time work in my profession, or because I've had to work outside my field only occasionally, and I don't understand that point of view. What's vital for unemployed people is to have state job center counselors who aren't burdened with too many cases and who can give unemployed people time and attention. Counselors need to learn about the industry or field the person wants to work in to find them a proper long-term solution.
The unemployed say they aren't listened to, but talked down to, typified by President Emmanuel Macron's 2018 instructions to an actual job seeker that he could merely cross the street and find a job. In almost 5 years, Macron's neoliberal revolution has provoked massively repressed social protests, but only barely reduced unemployment from its all-time high in 2017 of 6.3 million people. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
Yemenis have staged a demonstration in front of the United Nations office in Sana'a to slam the Saudi Arabia's continued detention of seven Yemeni oil ships. A number of health workers were also among the protesters.
Saudi Arabia is still holding seven fuel ships, all of which have entry permits from the United Nations and have been inspected by UNVIM. However, unfortunately, these ships are pirated in international waters by American and Saudi warships. Yemenis are suffering from a severe fuel crisis in all provinces due to the ongoing blockade by Saudi Arabia. The health sector is the worst hit by this crisis, and this threatens the lives of millions, including children, who are bearing the brunt of Saudi war in Yemen.
The Ministry of Health said the healthcare system is on the verge of collapse as many health facilities cannot provide medical services due to the ongoing Saudi blockade.
There is no doubt that the fuel ban affects all vital sectors, especially the health sector. All hospitals will be subject to shutdown due to the lack of electric power, including intensive care, emergency, blood banks, dialysis centers, oncology treatment centers, and many other departments. There is an inevitable catastrophe that will affect the health sector, which is exposing the lives of millions to the risk of death.
For years now, Yemenis have been suffering from a harsh fuel shortage as the Saudi Arabia keeps detaining Yemeni oil vessels despite obtaining entry permits by the UN. The fuel crisis has heavily affected the health sector and left the war-wracked country in a desperate struggle to survive.
The protesters say the illegal seizure of Yemen's oil ships is a clear violation of international law that prohibits all acts of piracy. They say it is a shame on the United Nations to turn a blind eye to the years-long blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia and its allies on Yemen.
On Monday, ministers from the EU's 27 member states gathered in Brussels to discuss growing tensions with Russia. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken joined them via video link. The West warns the toughest ever financial sanctions against Moscow will be unveiled if Ukraine is invaded.
It will be a quick and determined action with a strong unity, not only within the European Union, but also internationally.
Moscow accuses the West of unnecessary provocation. This as the US ponders deploying thousands of troops and military hardware to Eastern Europe. Many security analysts say the Kremlin is fully justified in demanding that NATO halts its expansion around Russia. There's concern that if a new sanctions package is unveiled, Moscow could turn off the EU's essential gas supplies. Speaking to us online, the European Policy Centre's Amanda Paul expressed scepticism regarding threats from Brussels.
There may not be a strong desire from some member states to have very tough sanctions that could actually have economic losses for those member states themselves.
Also on Monday, the EU announced €1.2 billion to support Ukraine.
This package will help Ukraine now to address its financing needs due to the conflict. We count on the Council and the European Parliament to adopt this emergency macrofinancial assistance as soon as possible.
Von der Leyen says a further €6 billion is in the pipeline for Kiev. This is in addition to the €17 billion already sent by the EU to Ukraine since 2014. Critics are incensed because the bloc zone agency, the European Court of Auditors, says Ukraine is extremely corrupt. Negotiations between the West and Russia will continue at various political levels in the coming days. Analysts say the only option is for both sides to give ground, because the alternative is unthinkable. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A moment of celebration for supporters of Julian Assange. Another chance at preventing his extradition to the United States on espionage charges. His partner, with whom he has two young children, shared the good news.
The High Court certified that we had raised point of law of general public importance, and that the Supreme Court has good grounds to hear this appeal. The situation now is that the Supreme Court has to decide whether it will hear the appeal. But make no mistake, we won today in court.
In December last year, judges in this court decided there was no ground to believe Assange was a clear suicide risk, which an earlier ruling had found to be the case. Also last year, U.S. government lawyers gave assurances Assange would not be treated inhumanely if extradited. Assurances Assange's legal team and supporters find hard to believe.
The assurances are really misnamed. They aren't assurances and they aren't guarantees, because contained within the very same document is the provision that the United States can withdraw them at any time.
The U.S. wants Assange to face trial over the release in 2010 of thousands of classified military documents relating to U.S. war crimes in Afghanistan and Iraq. Rights groups have denounced his treatment and described it as a serious threat to press freedom.
Is an extremely worrying case, and it will have huge implications for journalism and press freedom internationally. If the U.S. is successful in extraditing Julian Assange and prosecuting him under the Espionage Act there, he would be the first publisher prosecuted under that law, which lacks a public interest defense. That same precedent could be applied to any publisher, any journalist, any source. So we would see likely a very serious chilling effect, in particular on national security reporting around the world, any type of journalism that deals with leaked information. So this is one reason we highlight this case is, of course, Julian Assange's own rights are at stake here, but what this means for journalism around the world is extremely alarming.
Today's decision, a partial victory for the campaign to release Julian Assange. It will now be up to the Supreme Court to decide if it will hear Assange's case. But until that happens, his supporters say the fight to win his freedom is on. Saeed Pourreza, London.
South Korean President Moon Jae-in returned from visits to the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt Saturday. In Dubai, South Korean companies inked the country's largest ever single-arm sale, a reported $3.5 billion missile defense system for the UAE. Some South Korean activists worry about the human cost.
South Korea's decision to export weapons rather than trying to help to peacefully resolve the conflict raises a voice of concern over the export, because it generates further tension, conflict, and division in the region.
South Korea has also increased weapons exports to Saudi Arabia. Chung Uk-shik has tracked South Korea's weapons sales for 20 years.
The U.S. military-industrial complex is always mentioned and criticized, but one can question whether South Korea will also gradually develop a military-industrial complex through continued weapons exports.
South Korea has steadily increased its arms development over the past two decades and now ranks as the world's sixth leading weapons exporter. South Korean companies have also diversified their offerings to include tanks, missiles, and even controversial cluster bombs. Saudi Arabia has deployed South Korea's Raybolt anti-tank guided missile to Yemen, where the conflict features more advanced weapons. Riyadh's recent airstrikes generated mass demonstrations there, but little interest in South Korea. Activist Chung worries how arms exports will affect diplomacy.
The government, media, and the South Korean people need to reflect about on how our appeals for support for peace on the Korean Peninsula will be considered when South Korea is increasing weapons exports under the rationale of profit and income.
President Moon Jae-in's trip comes as his single term is set to wrap up in May. However, South Korea's arms industry enjoys broad bipartisan political support. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip came together to highlight the plight of the Palestinian inmates in Israeli jails amid the spread of COVID-19 infection. According to Wa'ad Institute for Palestinian Prisoners Affairs, the virus is significantly on the rise among the inmates, infecting hundreds of Palestinian prisoners who have caught the new coronavirus. The statement indicates that more than 100 of the Palestinians have tested positive. These Palestinians say the spread of the virus among Palestinian inmates is the result of Israel's intentional policy of medical negligence.
Israeli regimes keeps adopting inhumane measures against our prisoners, depriving them of their basic rights. There is a clear intentional medical negligence by Israeli regime that is aimed on putting more pressure on our inmates.
The Palestinians called on the international community and the Red Cross to provide the required medical care for Palestinian inmates and stop the spread of the pandemic in Israeli jails. Palestinian factions in the Gaza Strip say they hold the Israeli regime fully responsible for the lives of the Palestinian inmates, stressing that the prisoners' issue is a top priority and they won't remain silent over these Israeli violations. According to Palestinian authorities, 5,000 Palestinians, including women and minors, are currently held in Israeli jails, with many of them under the so-called administrative policy, which enables Israel to hold them in jail with no charge. The total number of infections among Palestinian inmates has risen rapidly, according to the Prisoners Club statement. Palestinians are calling on the international community to make an action, adding this intentional medical negligence amounts to complicity in the Israeli crimes practiced against Palestinians inside jails. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Iran and the remaining signatories of the 2015 agreement that promised sanctions relief for certain caps on Iran's nuclear program are intensifying the process of drafting a revived deal. Delegates from Iran, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, China, and the EU have now adopted a new format for discussions, meeting together in one room to focus on the Iranian demands for verified and effective removal of US sanctions and guarantees Washington will not withdraw from the agreement in future or reimpose sanctions. This while expert-level talks continue in other rooms on Iranian nuclear commitments and the sequencing of steps that need to be taken for Iran and the US to go back to full compliance. European and American officials have been raising concerns about the amount of time left to reach a conclusion, with some diplomats suggesting they only have weeks, and other sources citing early February as an unofficial deadline.
If Western countries give the necessary assurances, the necessary guarantees, and if they remove the sanctions, then that will be enough. But if they want to drag their feet, if they want to be slow about it, then the negotiations will be slow. For Iran, that is the issue. The dates, the length of the negotiations, whether it takes a week or a month or a year, that's irrelevant. Because the Iranians know if they get a bad deal, there's nothing that they're going to be able to do about it. So they have to make sure that the Europeans and the Americans are unable to cheat them at the negotiating table.
Sources close to the talks say the negotiations are progressing at a normal pace. To claim that the talks have stagnated is unfair, they say, because resolving the outstanding issues requires further discussions given the complexities of the problems. Omar Lezgi, Vienna.
Today, on this January day, my whole soul is in this, bringing America together, uniting our people, uniting our nation.
That was how Joe Biden laid out the path for his presidency during his inaugural address on the 6th of January, 2021. It came after supporters of his predecessor, Donald Trump, raided the Capitol Hill in a deadly unrest because the former president refused to accept defeat and claimed an election fraud. Speaking exactly a year after he took office, Biden said he had not overpromised in his inaugural speech on what he could achieve. Yet a review of the status quo in the United States tells a different story. Back in October, a poll showed that 41% of Biden's supporters and 52% of those who voted for Trump want Republican and Democratic-led states to secede and form two new countries. The divide continues to define the American society and politics to the day. On Thursday, the U.S. Senate blocked Biden's key legislation to protect voting rights for African Americans and other minorities, especially in the Republican-controlled states. Democrats pushed the legislation amid restrictive voting in some Republican-led states, which Democrats see as a slow-motion coup to retake the White House in the next presidential election. Republican-led states also moved to restrict teaching critical race theory in schools. That's teaching students on the history of slavery and racism and how they shaped U.S. institutions and policy to ensure the dominance of white people. One such ban did actually become law in Mississippi on Saturday. The debates hark back to racial tensions triggered by the fatal shootings of African Americans, which have ignited some of the most serious social unrest of the modern times in the U.S. A case in point in the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse in November. The not guilty verdict in the trial was an affront to those who saw the teenager as a murderer, butting into a protest against racial injustice and killing two demonstrators. The ruling, however, was a gift to those who saw Rittenhouse as a right-wing patriot. Over the past year, the U.S. has also seen huge divisions among Republican and Democratic voters over such issues as the conservative-led push to restrict constitutional abortion rights, obligatory vaccination against the coronavirus, and even Democratic-led attempts to curb access to guns. These have also been key areas of political point scoring among Republicans and Democrats.
One thing I hadn't been able to do so far is get my Republican friends to get in the game of making things better in this country. I did not anticipate that there'd be such a stalwart effort to make sure that the most important thing was that President Biden didn't get anything done. Think about this. What are Republicans for? What are they for?
Deep divides have always been there among Democrats and Republicans and their supporters, but the Capitol Hill insurrection seems to have radicalized things. Trump continues to enjoy backing from Republicans after he triggered the insurrection by the claim that Biden won the election by vote rigging. This has polarized American politics more than ever before. The insurrection has also sent reverberations through the American society, dividing people across political and racial lines.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, purposeful upbringing of children. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of being purposeful upbringing or having a purposeful upbringing of the children. Generally, what we see in our daily life or in our routine life, we see that there are people who have children, there is a family, but in that family, people raise their kids or they train their kids, they raise them in a way that there is no specific purpose behind it. And the only thing which they try to have is to have kids as having a good manners maybe, or they send them to the school so that they can learn things and they can become educated people so that tomorrow they can have a good earning. Maybe they help them or they advise them in selecting a specific field in which they can obviously study and later they can have a good job. But other than that, we don't see anything in the life. There is no purpose in raising kids. There is no purpose of training kids in the best way. And therefore, we see that the upbringing of children is without any purpose. And this is something dangerous, because this will not take kids to a point. This will not take them towards perfection. And therefore, we need to pay attention towards being purposeful in upbringing of children, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of purposeful upbringing of children. Now, when we talk about the purposeful upbringing of children, it means that we should have a plan in the life. When we are raising kids, we should follow a kind of plan through which we can basically raise them, or we can train them. Therefore, those parents who do follow a plan and according to a purpose, they are training their kids, they're raising their kids, they're upbringing their children, it means that they have some expectations from their children. They have a plan, and through that plan, when they follow the plan, they are expecting things from the children. So that, for example, in a specific age, they do this thing, and on the specific stage, they should be able to do such and such things. So therefore, it is very important that when we are training kids, obviously this is our duty, when we are upbringing or raising kids, it should be purposeful. And the purpose is to make a pure human being out of them, to make them pure and to take them towards perfection. And that's what we need to strive for. That's what we need to work on. Because when we talk about the purification, it is not only praying, it is to become a good human being. It is to become someone who observes the justice in the society. It is about someone who does not oppress others, who look after the rights of the others, who take care of the society, of himself, of the parents. He takes care of the parents, of he respects the others as well. And he is the one who is good in the society, and he has the capability of becoming a leader. He has the capability of becoming a teacher or the other professions. Whatever he chose, he is best in them. Therefore, it is necessary to be purposeful in raising children, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Limelight. Not a single day passes without a Palestinian tree or an orchard being set ablaze or cut down. Clearing the Palestinian environment is, and has always been, the prerequisite of constructing or expanding Jewish settlements. For these colonies to be built, countless trees have to be removed, along with the Palestinians who have planted them. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Ramzi Barood, journalist. This article is titled, How the Israeli Regime Occupation Ravages the Environment in Palestine. Stay tuned for more. Those who are not familiar with how the Zionist regime, particularly the Zionist regime military occupation of Palestine, is actively and irreversibly damaging the environment, might reach the erroneous conclusion that Tel Aviv is at the forefront of the global fight against climate change. The reality is the exact opposite. In his speech at the UN Climate Change Conference, COP26 in Glasgow, the Zionist regime's right-wing Prime Minister Naftali Bennett pushed the Israeli brand of innovation and ingenuity to promote clean energy and reduce greenhouse gases. The Zionist regime uses this particular brand to sell everything, whether to promote itself as the savior of Africa, to help governments intercept fleeing refugees, to push deadly weapons in the global market, or as Bennett has done in Scotland, supposedly save the environment. Just before we hastily dismiss Bennett's rhetoric as empty words, we must remember that some are actually buying into this Israeli regime propaganda, one of whom is the American billionaire Bill Gates. The day following Bennett's speech, Gates met with the Zionist regime prime minister on the sidelines of COP26, to discuss the establishment of a working group to study potential cooperation between the Zionist regime and Gates Foundation in the area of climate change innovation, the Times of Israel newspaper reported recently. According to the newspaper, Gates, who had asserted in his meeting with Bennett that only innovation can solve the problem of climate change, said, "That's really what Israel is known for." Gates' obsession with innovation, however, might have blinded him from addressing other issues that the Zionist regime is also known for, namely, being the world's leading human rights violator, whose horrific track of record of racial apartheid and violence is known to every member of the United Nations. However, there is something else that Gates might also not be aware of. The systematic and purposeful destruction of the Palestinian environment, resulting from the Israeli regime occupation of Palestine and Tel Aviv's insatiable appetite for military superiority, thus constant innovation. Every act that is carried out to entrench the military occupation consolidates the Israeli regime's colonial control, and expanding illegal Jewish settlements directly impacts the Palestinian environment. Not a single day passes without a Palestinian tree or an orchard being set ablaze or cut down. Clearing the Palestinian environment is, and has always been, the prerequisite of constructing or expanding Jewish settlements. For these colonies to be built, countless trees have to be removed, along with the Palestinians who have planted them. Over the years, millions of Palestinian olive and fruit-bearing trees were uprooted in the Zionist regime's constant hunger for more land. The soil erosion in many parts of occupied Palestine speaks volumes of this horrendous ecocide. But it does not end here, of course. For hundreds of illegal Jewish settlements hosting a population of more than 600,000 settlers to survive, a heavy price is being exacted from the Palestinian environment on a daily basis. According to the thorough research of Ahmad Aboufu, an independent legal researcher with Al-Haq Rights Group, illegal Israeli settlements generate around 145,000 tons of domestic waste daily. Aboufu reported that in 2016 alone, around 83 million cubic meters of wastewater were pumped throughout the West Bank. Moreover, the Zionist regime has near total control of Palestinian water resources. It relies on the occupied West Bank's aquifers to supplant its need for water while denying Palestinians access to their own water. According to Amnesty International, the average Israeli receives 300 liters of water per day, while a Palestinian receives a much smaller share of 73 liters. The problem is accentuated when the water usage of illegal Jewish settlers is taken into account. The average settler consumes as much as 800 liters per day, while entire Palestinian communities could be denied a drop of water for days and weeks, often as a form of collective punishment. The issue with the water is not just that of outright theft, denial of access, or unequal distribution of water resources. It is also that of the lack of clean and safe drinkable water, an issue that has been highlighted by international human rights groups for many years. The result of these unfair policies has forced many Palestinians to purchase water brought by trucks at prices ranging from $4 to $10 per cubic meter. Amnesty International found, highlighting that for the poorest Palestinian communities, water expenses can at times make up half of a family's monthly income. As bad as the situation may sound, the plight of besieged Gaza is much worse than that of the occupied West Bank. The tiny and overcrowded strip is the perfect example of the Zionist regime cruelty. 2 million Palestinians live there while being denied the most basic human rights, let alone freedom of movement. Since the Zionist regime military blockade on Gaza in 2007, the environment of coastal region has been in constant deterioration. With little electricity and with bombed-out sewage plants, Palestinians have been forced to dump their unprocessed sewage into the Gaza. Gaza's underground water is now polluted to the extent that 97% of the available water is now undrinkable, according to the United Nations reports. This is only the tip of the iceberg. From the destruction of Palestinian wells, to the poisoning of trees, to the demolishing of entire ecosystems to make space for the Zionist regime's apartheid wall, to the use of depleted uranium in its various wars against Gaza, the Zionist regime has been on an unrelenting mission to ruin Palestine's environment in all of its manifestations. Those who are hurting the planet have no right to claim the role of being its survivors. The Zionist regime in its current violent regime is the enemy of the environment, and this is what it truly should be known for.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must Open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. So we're trying to understand the social system in Islam, and we're trying to dig deeper into how we are able as individuals to contribute to social justice, to understand what our position is as far as bringing about coexistence and peace and harmony, and in all, you know, just being better people. How we need to be there for one another as far as facilitating religious awareness. And that's why Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli here, he mentions religious gatherings or religious organizations, or you organizing religious gatherings or hay'a. You know, we all know the many ahadith mentioned by Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. They say to us, ihyu amrana rahimallah man ahya amrana, revive our affairs. Now the hadith says that I love your scent and your spirits. Un inni uhibbu rihakum wa rawhakum, as the hadith says. Then there's this hadith from Imam Al-Baqir salamullahi alayhi. We're talking about, you know, you organizing Laylatul Jum'ah, Dua Kumail, organizing a program for mu'mineen and mu'minat to be together. Organizing the establishing of a center, the establishing of a masjid, the establishing of a Husayniya, whatever it may be, something regular, something consistent, something that will be productive, something that will be positive. That is another effective way of al-ta'awun ala al-birri wal-taqwa.
I invite you to listen to the continuation of the program on IRIB English Radio.
Here the hadith says, اجتمعوا, from Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, اجتمعوا وتذاكروا تحف بكم الملائكة. Get together and learn from each other, educate one another. تذاكروا, discuss matters of religion, matters of knowledge, matters of social affairs, whatever it may be. تحف بكم الملائكة, angels will circle around you. رحم الله من أحيا أمرنا, may the mercy of Allah be upon whoever revives our affairs. Another hadith from Imam al-Sadiq عليه السلام, اتقوا الله وكونوا إخوانا برارا, be wary of God and be righteous brethren. Have that strong network of brotherhood and sisterhood that we need. متحابين, where you love one another. في الله, for the sake of Allah. متواصلين, that you connect with each other. That's why I said networking with each other. متواصلين, متراحمين, that you have mercy with each other. متحابين في الله, متواصلين, متراحمين. تزاوروا, visit one another. وتلاقوا, meet one another. وتذاكروا, learn from one another. وتذاكروا أمرنا وأحيوه, learn from one another our affairs. Teach one another our affairs, the affairs of Islam, the affairs of Deen, the affairs of the Quran, the affairs of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. وأحيوه, and revive it. It's a very important point that we need to understand and learn. We're helping one another, we're organizing gatherings, we're remembering that we have a responsibility.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ و سواب داره فرون روزون
است. One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فرندرخکاری اینجا کم حساب داره دعا هم داره سوا هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که رو گفته بودم گفته دیگه اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Imam al-Sadiq, he said to Fudail, one of the companions, he said to Fudail, تَجْلُسُونَ وَتُحَدِّثُونَ. Do you sit down together and discuss affairs, discuss matters of education, sharing knowledge and things like that? He says, Naam. Fudayl replies, Naam, ju'iltu fidak. Yes, I be sacrificed for you. Qala inna tilka al-mujalis uhibbuha. I love these kind of gatherings. You're organizing gatherings to revive the affairs, to learn about religion, to gain knowledge. I love these kind of gatherings. Fa'ahyu amrana rahimallah man ahya. Amrana, revive our affairs. May Allah have mercy upon whoever revives our affairs. Ya Fudail, O Fudail, man dhakarana, whoever remembers us, whoever mentions us. O dhukirna indah, or whoever is present in a place where we are mentioned. Fakharaja min aynihi mithlu junahu dhubab. And they weep. And of course, this is in the majalis of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, or majalis of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. And they weep a tear, they shed a tear as small as the wing of an insect. مثل جناح الذباب غفر الله له ذنوبه. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will forgive them of their sins. ولو كانت أكثر من زبد البحر. Even if it was more than the ground or the floor of the ocean. Beautiful hadith, which again explains to us that not only should we be there for people, not only should we assist one another, not only should we support one another, we shouldn't allow someone to fall. Unfortunately, we can see in our society today where we just want someone to fall. We just gossip about them. We just, you know, spread the bad news about somebody instead of concealing, instead of having benefit of the doubt, instead of knowing if it's true or if it's false. You know the hadith that bayn al-haqq wal-batil, between haqq and batil, the four fingers between what you see and what you hear, you know. And this is the reality, unfortunately, that, you know, we are happy when someone falls instead of being sad when someone else falls. We need to be happy in supporting one another, in concealing the faults of one another, in being there for each other, and most importantly, in contributing in the reviving and the spreading of our religion, in particular, the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.